Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Here we are again. Hello. And we're on Zoom today, so waving at each other from our little snugs. One day we're going to have to get round to having a photograph taken together. I don't know if you've noticed, but people keep saying that we look like each other, which, given that I can give you 10 years, is much more flattering to me than to you.
I don't mind. I think you're gorgeous. I'm quite happy to be likened to you.
Oh, ditto.
So, Maggie, bearing in mind where we ended up last time, I want to ask you, have you ever read a book called Ishmael by a man called Daniel Quinn?
No, but it's on my Kindle now because I downloaded it last time. I haven't got round to reading it because I'm currently on The Lady in the Temple by Dr. Margaret Barker and Goddesses by Joseph Campbell. So I'll get to it, but tell me more.
Okay, wait. First of all, though, I want to quickly give you a room for a quick plug. Haven't you got a book coming out today?
I have. It's called Tales of the Blue Panda, and it's basically the story of you and me on speed.
I've never been on speed in my life.
No, me neither. Well, not on purpose, anyway. I think I was actually slipped a tablet once in Sweden, but let that be another story. Yes. I've written a book which is about embracing my weird. I went on a course to find out how to get into TV, which was ironic because I used to work in TV, but I thought, I'm so out of date. And I said to them, I'd love to have a voice. You know, I'm a minister, but I'm too weird. And they keep telling me I'm too weird. And these two wonderful producers from Fremantle Television said, go weirder. Go weirder. Stop trying to fit into the mainstream and do a podcast. So that's how this podcast came about, because it came straight into my head. Oh, what about a podcast with Susie? And the more we've talked, the more I've thought, what would be the story I'd really like to write about a vicar and a witch? What would be the story that I'd love to write as fiction about how they could work together and what they could do and what they could do to alleviate the darkness, and let's have a nice mystery in the middle of it too. And yes, it's out on Friday, and I'm chuffed to bits with it. I really am. I'll hate it by this time next year because you always move on to the next book. Well, I won't hate it. You never hate any of your children, but I'll have moved on, you know. But at the moment, I'm chuffed to bits with it. Tales of the Blue Panda, and it's on Amazon. It will be in your local bookshop if you don't want to go to Amazon, and I quite understand it if you don't.
Certainly won't be going to Amazon. Good. Well, that sounds funny, and doubtless it'll be funny. I can't wait to read it.
I hope you don't disagree with your portrayal. I hope you don't disagree with your portrayal.
Whatever, I'm sure it'll be fine.
If this I'll is just the last podcast, you'll know why, ladies and gentlemen.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
If this is our last podcast because we never speak to each other again, you'll know why, ladies and gentlemen.
That's anyway, not very likely.
No, tell me about Ishmael.
It must be said. So you've probably got a few more weeks of me speaking to you. Okay, well, anyway, I hugely encourage you and anyone else to read this book, Ishmael, which is, I'm pretty sure it's old. I couldn't possibly say how old, but it's certainly not out today. I think it might have been out 30 years ago. But in it, he proposes basically the idea that the story of Adam and Eve and the Tree of Life is a story which comes from not the taker society, in his words, that we are all part of in the Western patriarchal world, but from a society who existed before us, or maybe even congruent with us in other places. Well, definitely congruent with us in other places, which is, and they are the levers, and that basically the story of Adam and Eve is a story about a taker in a leaver society, and that's the message. Basically, exactly what you said, that the tree said no and the apple was taken anyway. And that after we last spoke, I was thinking about that and the other aspect of our conversation, which was about toxic masculinity and toxic femininity, and feeling like I hadn't necessarily really either understood what you meant, perhaps, or nailed it down in my own mind. What did I mean by toxic masculinity and toxic femininity? You know, it's very easy to bandy these words around, but what did I really mean in a really, really nailed down to the smallest possible kind of way of explaining it? And having wandered about over the internet, sadly, I don't remember whose wisdom I'm now repeating, but the one that really spoke to me was someone saying, amongst other things, that for them, toxic masculinity was unhealthy competition, and that toxic femininity was unbalanced compassion. And I thought, ah, yes, okay. I really think that really hits the nail on the head, which then led me to the place of, these are all about boundaries. The story of the tree saying no and us eating the apple anyway, the story of us constantly being in pursuit of more, the fact that when we farm, we harvest the whole damn field. We don't wait. I'm not slagging off farmers at all. This is, we do everything like this in the West. Yeah. We take it all if we can. There's no, well, I'm going to leave this for the sparrows and that for the badgers and even old Ratty, he can have this. It's just mine, so I'm going to take it all. And that the issue of unhealthy competition is also an issue of boundaries, and the issue of imbalanced compassion is an issue of boundaries, and that the boundary between enough, sufficient, and that kind of disgusting, greedy consumption that we're encouraged to perceive as being normal is us just overstepping every boundary ever that's been given to us by nature, by life. And I wondered what you made of all of that.
I agree with every single word of it. I might put it differently, but I think there's all sorts of aspects that we need to look at here. And again, we don't necessarily have the language for it because we haven't spotted it in previous generations, what's going on. It may not have been going on quite as badly as it is right now, but I was been thinking about it too, and thinking about specifically the feminine, because I'm going to be doing a course on it, which is why I'm reading all these books at the moment to sort of gen me up a little bit more, make sure I don't make too much of a prat of myself. But what I came up with on the feminine side, I think in a nutshell, in an absolute nutshell, the positive patriarchal aspect is yes, and the positive feminine is no. And it's like the yin yang symbol. You cannot have just a toxic patriarchy. It's got to have a toxic feminine as well, because the eye of the opposite is in each side of the yin yang symbol, and the two always work together, and they're always working either positively or negatively. But on the feminine side, it's not feminine as we keep saying, it's the yin side. What I came up with was the difference between law, L-O-R-E, and law, L-A-W. So, and also the spirit of the law, which I think is the healthy aspect to it, or the letter of the law, which is the unhealthy aspect. Because when you're laying down the law, the letter of the law, justice can go straight out of the window, because the letter of the law says that anybody who kills with intent goes to jail, or in some countries is executed. And the whole point of the trial by jury aspect is to try and work out the circumstances around it, whether that letter of the law is appropriate. And of course, you can't apply justice as to whether the letter of the law is appropriate without understanding compassion, healthy compassion for all aspects in this process. Does that make sense?
It makes such beautiful sense. And I love law, L-O-R-E, and law, L-A-W, because just to expand on exactly what you've just said, if you're, in order to not allow the letter of the law to become unhealthy, you need the law, L-O-R-E, as in you need the circumstantial stories that mean that the letter of the law is or is not justice.
Yes.
And yeah, I think that's wonderful. And actually, your explanation of the yin and the yang symbol mean that what I wanted to kind of butt in there and go, yes, but,
as I want to,
was, is that to me, I agree that there's this, you know, yes, that's the masculine and the strong but gentle, empowered no, that is feminine, but also within the yes there is a no, and within the no there is a yes. And so always these things are both, they are the thing that they first seem, and they are its opposite, and they are the place where they meet in the middle. And by the very nature of talking about the active, the receptive, you know, the masculine, the feminine, the yin and the yang, however we want to name them, we have to understand that they exist in reciprocity.
Absolutely.
Exactly as that symbol shows, and that you simply cannot have one without the other, and they are not mutually exclusive. They are, by definition, mutually inclusive.
Absolutely. They work together as one.
Yeah.
So if one's out of balance, the other one has to work really hard to get it back into balance to make sure that it doesn't go out of balance in supporting the imbalance. Yes, it's quite a roller coaster, but it always comes back in the Kabbalistic tradition, which is the Judaic mystical tradition that I love, to the how we discern the soul. And the word discern is really important, because the soul is made up from truth and beauty, discernment and compassion and loving kindness. But the only way to work from the soul is in the present. The ego always works with past and future. It brings them into the present, but it's reliant on what happened before. This is what happened before, therefore this is what has to happen again. Or this is what happened before, therefore we have to do something else to make it not happen again. But when you're working from the soul, this is now. What is required now? What is the discernment now? What is the mercy now that brings a beautiful truth? And it's hard work, and it's really tiring, and most of us don't spend much time in the present moment at all. And it's rare that you spend that much time in the present moment when you're talking, even, because you're expressing what you've just thought from the past and the future. So I'm not saying that I've got it right in any way, shape or form, but again, it's coming back to what Jesus called metanoia. Think a new thought. Look at it in purity and in innocence rather than ignorance.
So I'm glad you mentioned Jesus, because that was about to be my question, is that it's so beautiful to hear that the soul defined as truth and beauty. But you're talking about a Kabbalistic tradition. So is the soul defined as truth and beauty in what we think of as a Christian tradition? Or,
oh, that's a very interesting question. I think so. Oh, yeah, I'm going to quote something. I think it's from the Gospel of Luke, and I should have looked it up before we got together. There's one sentence that I think sums up this perfect balance, and it's Mary. Because we have to remember that the Bible has been edited all the way through. We've got the version written by the winners, if you like. But there's this one phrase about Mary, which just is magnificent and I think sums up the soul. Mary held these things in her heart. This was all what everybody else thought about the birth of her holy child, her creation, if you like, because she's replicating the idea of creation of perfection. And other religions also apply, you know, other saviours also apply, other holy people may also apply. But she didn't bitch about it, she didn't ask questions about it, she didn't say what was right or wrong about it. She accepted what was happening and held it in her heart. And I think that does explain it, because if you go into meditation with the idea of holding what's going on in your heart, you're actually not holding it in your ego, you're not complaining about it, you're not bitter about it, but you are holding it. You are holding it in a vessel, because we've learned recently about the pericardium, which is it's the sort of pouch that holds the human heart and presumably animal hearts in fluid so that it is held safe, so it doesn't get knocked. So the heart is held, and the heart can hold. And when you can hold stuff without judging it and allow it to unfold, I think that is actually Jesus's Christian teaching in a nutshell, that to allow what is without judging it and to see the perfection in it. And that's where the healing will come.
Is that not the very definition of receptive?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you've just very ably but slightly Jesusly described the goddess.
Do that while I've got a mouthful of tea.
Even on Zoom, I can make her spit her tea. Wahaha.
You on, yeah.
So what, every time you mention Mary, what comes to me is a kind of... I do not have any evidence for this that I'm aware of, that I can think of right now, but I just can't help feeling that Mary is a kind of ancient goddess. I mean, the mother of God, is that not the very definition of
the goddess,
the ancient goddess?
Yeah.
And the fact that we call her Mary, you know, that... La mer, the sea, the original mother, we all came out of the water. We dress her in blue, the colour, well, in inverted commas.
And Miriam, depending on how you spell it, means strong waters or bitter waters. So we have the choice. We can be strong or we can be bitter. So she's actually giving us that option. The thing about... all this stuff in the Bible is hidden, but it's hidden in plain sight. And if we were still in the land where we didn't write everything down and take it as a graven image, we would be talking about this more. And this is what we need to do. What does this woman, this pure woman, because it's utterly ridiculous when you think about it, that a woman would be changed by having a man's penis inside her. From pure to corrupted. I mean... where does that come from? You know, when you think about it, it's the most ludicrous concept, that a man's penis inside you changes who you are. But we've bitten it. We've bitten onto this, and we've believed it for so long that we've gone about this idea that Mary is the only pure woman because she never had a man's penis inside her. She was impregnated by God. And we've lost that thread, which is we are all impregnated by the divine, if we will be the vessel. Mm-hmm. And the vessel, to be the vessel, requires the humility to say, I don't know, there's something bigger than me and better than me, but I'm going to listen and see if I can perceive some of it and pass some of it on. So if you and I, in any way, shape or form, have passed some good stuff on, we've been Marys.
Yeah. Yeah, God. As ever, I'm slightly struck dumb by all the things that want to come out of my mouth at the same time. So that the idea of the vessel and the original mother, as it were, speaks so strongly to me. It speaks to the many, many layers of, you know, seeing our wombs as being the place of creativity. And I mean creativity in the most general sense of the word. So It doesn't have to be children. It can be, you know, creating books or paintings or businesses or or a meal or, you know, anything. But that place is microcosm of the macrocosm of the void, the great womb of all of life. And just as an aside, I would like to say that I don't believe that that is a thing that only happens in a woman's body. I don't know if I've said this before, but that because all human babies in the womb begin, I think it's only for like the first 6 or 8 days or something, but we're all female when we very first begin. And so inside the body of a man is the tiniest, weeniest little womb. Beginnings of, it's called the metawomb, and I think it's measured in like numbers of cells rather than centimeters or inches, but it's titchy, but it's there, that capacity to connect with the womb of all, with all of the beginnings, the original place, the no thing, the beginning of all of life, which could also metaphorically be seen as the sea, because we, you know, we know that all of life came out of the sea. But that we can therefore kind of hollow ourselves out, leave our ego aside, step away into truth and beauty and away from ego and chit chat and all of those things, and become the vessel, then what we're allowing is, we are allowing life, capital L, you know, God or goddess, to pass through us in a way which then allows the truth of truth and beauty into the world. So from the no thing through the vessel that is us, whether that be a you know, a womic vessel or a meta womb or the, you know, the cauldron that is us, if we can be that, then we can bring forth into the world truth and beauty. And to me, that's what we're here for.
Yeah. That's, and I think we have to keep emptying that vessel as well, because we clutter it up. Do you know what I mean? The vessel becomes, well, can, it's so easy for the vessel to become the ego, because this is my vessel. My vessel's right. You know, this is the vessel I use. Therefore, I want to use this vessel. So I think the emptying of it also is really important. The whatever we can do to cleanse and clear and say, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And also to share, because to me, that's another fundamental kind of part of what we're here to be and to do, and also how to be a vessel, is that once you have allowed the sacred, the divine, whatever it is, into you, into that vessel that's yours, whether it be, you know, us occasionally receiving and transmitting a little slice of wisdom, or Picasso receiving and transmitting Woman in Blue, whatever it is, that the plan is that we share it. And that's why I'm so very up for these conversations, because I think the sharing of, you know, even if you and I are both completely wrong, at least we're trying.
Yes.
And that by the sharing of what's coming in to our vessel and going, you're like, oh, look, here's what's in my cauldron, what's in yours, Maggie?
Yeah.
That we're allowing something through, and that, to me, the kind of the purpose of the well active and receptive, the non-toxic, the well and wise active and receptive, is to be in the place of truth and beauty, to constantly be in pursuit of truth and beauty, and to be allowing truth and beauty through, but in this very boundaried way, so that the boundless can come and be transmitted in a way that then is erecting or kind of, I don't know, constructing, but not in a necessarily, I'm making it sound very kind of architectural and structural, but it can be very, very
fluid,
soft and nurturing. You know, they can be both kinds of boundaries. But that by by knowing the boundaries and knowing the honouring implicit in knowing boundaries, that we would have a very, very, very different world if we paid attention only to that tiny, tiny thing.
Absolutely. And also to be willing to be wrong, because you're quite right. We may be completely wrong in a lot of the things we say. We may even be offensive accidentally or on purpose with our swearing. But the willingness to be wrong is part of that vital vulnerability, you know, that vital humility. And if you aren't willing to step up and be wrong, I mean, you kind of see this stuff on social media nowadays of people that's absolutely determined to be right.
And do you know what? That's one of the things that I see in toxic masculinity, is that it seems to me that in all that's gone wrong with what's supposed to be masculinity, where it's gone really wrong, one of the fundamental places is that there are way too many people out there who see being wrong as in some way, like, pretty much life-threatening.
Yes.
And that altogether too many of those people are in a man's body or have very much internalized the patriarchy. And that, you know, being wrong is a serious problem. Mm. Why? How? How is it that life is no longer considered a glorious experiment?
Yes.
How is it that we are so committed to the idea that we must be right? It's extraordinary. And I'm afraid I think I can lay that absolutely squarely at the doormat of Christianity, because there's wrong and right, and there's rules. There's so many rules.
Yeah, and Islam and Judaism, children of the book, yes. But yes, absolutely. I mean, 613 laws in the Hebrew Testament. But most of them are still being channeled by right-wing Christians who think that they can pick and choose on one law and not the other law, and have no concept of the spirit of the law, which is exactly what Jesus came to teach. Can I just dive back for a second? Because you mentioned the pursuit of truth and beauty, which was a sort of a quotation from the American Declaration of Independence, the pursuit of happiness. And in those days, I just think it's worth mentioning that in those days, the pursuit of meant the practice of. So it's not about chasing after truth and beauty. It's about practicing.
Yeah,
truth
absolutely.
And beauty. Sorry, that was a slight diversion. But
no, it's worth nailing down the language always. You know how I feel about language, yes, because it was in that context that I made meant it.
But you're right about this. Being wrong is absolutely unacceptable. At the moment, there's a huge furore out there about the writer J.K. Rowling and whether she's transphobic or not. And if you follow all the evidence back all the way and do the decent job of research, I think the jury's out on that, because I've done some journalistic research on it. But every time I have tried to say, we are actually throwing a lot of mud that is unsubstantiated. It may well be true that one particular woman is transphobic. It may well be true. But what good are you doing by magnifying it? If there is somebody out there who you believe is anti you and what you believe and what you stand for, surely the balanced answer is to look in another direction, and is to perhaps do what you can to educate and inform that this opinion is harsh. But if you throw more anger at it, you're actually making the whole darn thing bigger and making a person who may be transphobic more so.
I remember this when it started, and I remember thinking that it was it seemed like just the most horrible mess right from the very beginning.
It is a horrible mess. Yes.
Yeah, because from what I could see, apart from anything else, the conversation began out of her trying to speak about having been physically abused herself, and that somehow or other that got completely lost. And that it seems like one of those conversations where people have everyone's saying to everyone else, you said this, and they're all going, no, I didn't, and that no one's actually standing quietly for long enough and asking the question, well, what did you actually mean?
Yes.
But I don't know, because I haven't, truthful, I haven't been paying attention to anything much out there in the world.
I think that's very sensible, because you get caught up in it, and you're in danger of being... One gets, even if one tries to say, what is the balance here? And I got into terrible trouble for just one comment, which was, there's one book that J.K. Rowling has written under the pen name of Robert Galbraith, and now the latest trending thing is that she chose that name because it was the name of a scientist who worked on medicine for changing gay people into straight people. And I'd looked that up, and all I did was go to Wikipedia, and I found five other Robert Galbraiths and a Robert Galbraith Heath, who was the person who did that. And I don't know, it may well be that this particular woman is violently transphobic, chose that name deliberately did this, that and the other. But all I said on that thread was, I have read the book you're talking about. I personally couldn't find anything transphobic in it. Whoa! Oh God! Shouldn't shut up. But so, what? Advise me here. When you see something that's deeply out of balance, is it wise to try and create balance? Because I have a horrible feeling it isn't. Because then both sides turn on the person who's trying to balance it. Because basically, I think I'm probably trying to be a rescuer, which isn't going to help at all.
Yeah. I mean, by my discovered definition, but trying to be the rescuer puts you in imbalanced compassion, which makes you therefore toxic femininity.
Yeah, feminine. I think you're probably right, so I'm going to have to stop doing it. Instead of trying to say, let's look at the balance, just back away. But then again, don't we get into the idea of for evil to succeed, it just needs for a good person to do nothing?
Yeah, I think, as ever, I think there is... We're back to the law and the law, which is that I think where you can do good, do all the good you can, but that we're not responsible. I mean, part of the reason I don't tend to look at the news is because I can't do anything about it. And my nervous system as a human being was not designed to know the problems of the entire world. But where I can do something about it, I will pay attention and I will do my damnedest to play my part. And so I think, as ever, it's all about boundaries. That these battles are worth fighting if you believe you can do some good. And if it's clear that you can't, because what happens is you make some one small comment and a whole pile of poo gets thrown at you from both sides, it's clear that it's probably time to walk away, because frankly, on that particular issue, it just doesn't matter. When hell finally freezes over, what difference does it make whether J.K. Rowling does or does not think anything? Makes no odds.
Absolutely. All that matters is your own relationship with yourself and the divine. And if somebody else comes along, if I said to you, for example, Susie, you're a purple pig, you'd go, what? you just wouldn't register anything, because you know perfectly well you're a purple pig. But if I said you're not a purple pig, whoops. But you're definitely a purple pig, woman. Good God.
Just best look at you. Version.
Yeah. But if I said to you, you're a very bad practitioner because X, Y, it might well hurt you, because there might be some part of you that believed me. So I think that always it's about coming back to the truth and beauty in you, so that the other's opinion of you really doesn't matter. I'm not there yet, but that's the goal, isn't it? And not to say that in an arrogant way, as in I can behave in whatever way I believe because nobody else's opinion matters. It's about actually coming to the softness of your own centre and saying, let's just check in on here. How am I doing? Am I acknowledging the law? L-O-R-E. Am I being discerning? Am I being compassionate? And if I am satisfied that I am, and I will love and take care of myself and listen to the divine, then your attack doesn't matter.
Yeah, I would like to add to that that for me, if I'm going to make the statement, all that matters is my relationship with my own soul and with the divine, is that for me, the divine means the divine in everything.
Yes.
And that therefore, I'm, you know, it's, to me, it always comes back round to this story of, somebody put it very beautifully earlier, there's a lovely saying, again, it's been around since, well, what I usually say is since before Eve ate the apple, but it probably hasn't been around that long, which is live simply that others may simply live.
Yes.
And that if, to me, I expand that out, so my version of others is all of the rest of creation. So live so that the rivers can flow clean and the trees can breathe and the, you know, everyone.
Mm. Winged, ultimately, third, there is clawed. No other.
Sorry?
Ultimately, there is no other.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah, no, you put it much better than I do in that respect. So if you can make peace with yourself, you can make peace with the world. And you would not do anything to anything in the world that you would not willingly do to yourself.
Yes, absolutely. And then, you know, I think it becomes increasingly obvious which of those battles is it worth becoming involved in. Or, you know, I wish there was a word that came to mind as easily as battles do. I don't like to think of them as battles, and I don't want to put the energy of battling into them.
Quite. No, that's the thing, yeah. Yeah, because as soon as we start to fight anything, we're going to lower our energy to the level of the thing that we're trying to fight.
Well, and also we're bringing fight to what could be a perfectly calm and coherent discussion.
Mm.
You know, so I think, you know, in many ways, this podcast is a beautiful example of how it is not to bring the energy of fight to a discussion. So, you know, here we are sitting on our potentially opposing and yet so they are so not sides of the fence around, you know, you're a Christian and I'm not.
You're a witch and I'm not.
Yes. And we've yet to have an argument because we're absolutely, both of us, totally prepared to listen respectfully to what the other person has to say. And 9 times out of 10, when you actually listen to some greater or lesser degree, we're going, oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're just saying it differently. Oh,
actually, you put that better. Yes, I put that quite clumsily. Or no, actually, I think probably the way I put it for me works better, but I hear what you say. Yes. Yeah. Hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah. And that how many, if we're not talking about dominion over, so if we're not talking about it was my banana and you stole it, you know, how many instances are there in life really where actually it really, really, really matters that not only do you think the same as me, but that you use the same words? I would venture to suggest that there are very few. And yet, as a society, we get our knickers in a knot over so many things because we can't do that thing that, like you said, Mary held these things in her heart. We can't sit in reception. Mm. We can't sit in the utterly feminine, which every last one of us, even, you know, the man with the biggest muscles and the hairiest chest in the whole world, has that within himself to sit in the receptive and hold these things in our heart and allow ourselves to be the vessel and to listen first, to listen to that heart, rather than immediately allowing our ego to go, oh, well, but blah, 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 blah. And so, you know, round we go again.
Round we go again. And we've been round quite long enough this time, I think.
No way, already.
38 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
But we could go on.
Time flies when you're talking to a Christian.
Okay, well, that's it for this week then. We'll see you again next week. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you, Susie, for being my friend.
Thank you, Maggie, for being my friend, and lovely to see you, and hopefully we'll be in person next time.
I hope so too.